King Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of October 29th, 2019. And this is episode number 413. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And we are live on the Paranormal King Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com. And glad you could join us tonight if you're in the chat room. And if you're not in the chat room, head on over to ParanormalKing.com and click in there and join us. We're handing out candy tonight. It's Halloween, of course, so get your candy. We're limited to one handful each, though, however. But if you have big hands, you get a lot of candy. So that's how it works out for you. And you know, I'm a factoid person. I like facts and figures and information. So I was thinking about it today, and I realized it's been 119 days since July 4th. It seems like a long time. However, think of it this way. It's been 89 days since August 1st, but as of tonight, there are only 63 days until New Year's Eve. Ouch. That's pretty scary. Anyway, let's not worry about that. Let's not even worry about Christmas. Let's not even think about Thanksgiving, because we have to get through Halloween first. Sounds like retail. Right now, retail is pushing Christmas. Why? We got to get through Halloween first. Oh, yeah, and there's this turkey holiday coming up that no one's going to be thankful for because we're all going to be shopping. That's right. But yes, Halloween, this is the prime time for those of us in the paranormal, especially those in the ghost field. They're all rock stars this time of the year. Everyone wants to hear about what they do and how they do it. Libraries are filled up with people talking about ghosts and ghost investigation. And, you know, everyone's thinking about witches and pumpkins and I'm just thinking about candy, to be honest with you, but it is what it is. And of course, here in the Northeast, the weather is changing, so we're probably going to get a lot of rain on Halloween night. But nonetheless, it is a big holiday. It's a huge holiday for us. And well, yeah, happy Halloween. So 2 days from now, so this is officially our Halloween episode, I guess you could say. And I mean, this is it. This is the big time of the year. The biggest holiday for all of us. Really the one of the biggest holidays for anybody, really, that sells anything or does anything out there. But love this time of the year. I don't really love the weather, but it is what it is. So let's jump in. I have so much news, and we'll talk about tonight. Like I said, a lot of Halloween stuff, but we do have a story on the largest private collection of UFO information ever. And it's being archived and shared. And we're going to talk about a ghost that was haunting a baby. And her mom had to deal with this. Pretty scary stuff. And yes, we're going to talk ghosts a little bit more than we usually do. We haven't had that many ghost stories lately. And we're going to talk the 50 best ghost movies of all time. I really should have put my list together. This is not my list, so don't get mad at me, but it's a really interesting list of movies. I should have put my list together on this, but too late, I guess. And we're going to talk the history of haunted houses. And we're going to ask you, what are you dressing up as, or are you? And we'll talk about Chicago's alligator getting another run at fame. And a lot more tonight here on the Halloween edition of the Paranormal News Insider. And, you know, some years I used to bring a special show. There were years where I just had a pre-recorded show. I like to do the old radio plays from the 30s and 40s. And we've run a few of those over the years. I really enjoy those. I think it's nice and neat to just sit back and turn off the lights and light a candle and turn up the podcast and lay back and eat some candy and listen to the podcast and get lost in thought and candy wrappers as you listen. So I enjoy bringing you this show, but sometimes, yeah, I like to do the Halloween specials are fun too. But anyway, We're going to talk facts and figures and information about Halloween. And we kind of started that last week. But first, let me get some of the regular stuff out of the way. And as always, you can find me on social media. I mean, who is not on social media nowadays? I mean, fictional cartoon characters have social media. Actors, actresses, musicians, everybody's got a social media page. And you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/Paranews Insider. On Twitter, at Paranews Insider. And Instagram, also Paranews Insider. And that's, of course, also because that's the website I have, paranewsinsider.com. Made it a little shorter, a little more concise, paranewsinsider.com. And the show is, I've taken a little bit of time from doing this. So last week, I think after putting the show on, I wanted to look up to see who is still carrying the show. And so I upload the show through Podbean. So that's your quickest and easiest way to get a hold of the show. If you miss it, you can't listen live, you got something going on, you're watching a TV show, shame on you, or something else important is going on your Tuesday nights. So Podbean. Then, of course, it goes into a lot of other areas, such as iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Google Podcasts. I didn't know it was available on there, but I found it. Google Podcasts, Spreaker, Podcast Addict. I even have my own YouTube channel, so you can listen to it there. I don't dare show my face. I have a face for radio, pretty much. And Podchaser, and I don't know why. I thought we were on TuneIn, or my show is on TuneIn, but now I've tuned back into TuneIn. So if you're a fan of TuneIn and you listen to TuneIn, the Paranormal News Insider is back on there. I know I was on there before, and should be on a lot of other podcast suppliers as well. So if I'm not, let me know, and I'll do what I can, because I know we all have our favorites out there to listen to podcasts and radio shows. And, of course, this network, the Paranormal King Radio Network, is also on a lot of these networks as well. And there's a nice family of paranormal shows on here as well. So not just my show, but a lot of other great paranormal-themed shows on here as well. And not even going to talk about paranormal conferences and conventions. I haven't had time to update the listings for 2020 as of yet, but fear not, I will get around to it before, not before November. I guess that's not going to happen, but I'll get that updated very soon, because I know there's a lot of announcements for a lot of these events, and I know people are going to start planning on going to these things. And we'll get you updated on that as soon as we can. But I also want to mention, Bigfoot Eyewitness Radio. So I've been doing a lot of research, putting together a kind of a presentation of sorts. And I'll be on the Bigfoot Eyewitness Radio show sometime soon. I have got to get that set up sometime this week. Got a busy week, busy weekend coming, but I'll make sure I get that going so I can appear on that show and let you know. When I know, I will let you know. So BigfootEyewitness.com. It's a really unique show. So they'll have people who have seen Bigfoot, have their own personal encounters. We'll come on, talk about it for about a half hour or so about their individual sighting, and then the host asks some questions about their thoughts and feelings about Bigfoot. And of course, I'm going to be a little bit different being a researcher and investigator. So you're definitely not going to want to miss that. And I'm from Ohio, so we'll be talking about the Grassman sightings as a focus. So that being said, let's jump headfirst or feet first, however you want to, whatever you're comfortable with, into the news for this week. We had a lot to cover, and you're definitely going to want to be in the chat room. I got plenty of pictures and links to share with you, but fear not. If you can't be in the chat room, I will be sharing these links through the social media outlets that I discussed already. So with that being said, we're going to jump into UFO news. We're going to head up to, let's go up to Canada, New Brunswick. So back in January of this year, Joanna Aiton Kerr manager of the Provincial Archives of New Brunswick, Canada, reached out to famed UFO researcher and nuclear physicist Stanton Friedman. Kerr had heard that Friedman was getting ready to retire from UFO research, and she was able to convince him to allow Provincial Archives to preserve his collection of records. Friedman was he was a known piler. And what I mean by that, he would have piles of papers, stacks of papers, all over his desk, all over any flat spot, pretty much, instead of actually taking anything and putting it into a filing cabinet. There's a lot of people like that. I'm like that, for the most part. I do have tons of files. I have filing cabinets. So, you know, I'm kind of half and half. So Friedman was a researcher for about 60 years or so, but sadly, you may remember he did pass away earlier this year in May while returning from a speaking engagement in Ohio. Kerr stated it took 5 cargo vans to move all of Friedman's records prior to his passing. The most difficult part of the process is that none of his records are organized. There are currently 3 full-time employees working on in the private records section where his records are being sifted through. Unfortunately, these are only one of a number of collections that are being worked on at this time, so they can't really work on it full-time. It's thought that it may take up to 10 years to organize the files at the current rate that they're going with this. And essentially, they're spending about 1 full day a week organizing. They call it the Friedman Fridays, basically. So not a whole lot of time, because there's only so many people and only so much time, and there's a lot of other stuff going on. So in the chat room, I'm going to share with you a picture of Friedman's desk. I don't know when it was taken, but this is going to give you a pretty good idea. And if you've read in the story, you've seen it online, you have a pretty good idea of what his desk looks like. And his area has just got boxes with paperwork stacked all over the place. I mean, it's a little scary. A little scary. I've kind of gotten close to that a few times with books and a lot of printouts and things that I've had. So yeah, he stacks material everywhere on that. It may look like a scene out of the episode of Hoarders, if you've ever seen that show, but I can tell you, again, as a fellow stacker, I'll bet he's really would have been able to find anything he needed. If you would have mentioned this particular case or individual, he would have been able to find these records pretty quick. And I'm sure his method made pretty good sense to him. And he would have been able to find anything in all of that stacks of paperwork. So also, as of right now, there are no plans to make his archives available online. As great as that would be, it would be a huge task to scan all those files in addition to just organizing everything. So far, 25 boxes of his archives have been organized and are available for the public to view. So if you're interested in checking out the work of Stanton Friedman, what he's collected throughout the years of his decades of research and investigation, you can go visit. But again, you're not going to find it online. Not yet. It'll be a long time from now. You can visit the Provincial Archives of New Brunswick, which is located at the University of New Brunswick in Fredericton, New Brunswick, in Canada. So if you're not familiar with where New Brunswick is, look at your maps, or think about your maps in your mind, and find the state of Maine. Okay, now go northeast of Maine, and there it is. So it's northeast of Maine on your maps, and would be about a 5-hour drive from Portland, Maine. And be aware there are tolls as well, so pack some change and your passport as well. So kind of sad to hear stuff about Stanton Friedman, but also great to hear that he agreed to have his paperwork archived and not just taken by some random stranger or some other believer and who knows what done with it. And you'll be able to go out there and visit this and go through his research Although, again, it could take up to about 10 years to get all this stuff organized. But at least it will be available to the public. And I think that's fantastic. And I think any investigator should take note of that, that it doesn't matter what you do when you're alive. It matters, you know, what you leave behind, whether you pass away or you quit, you retire from the field or you walk away from it. What are you leaving behind? So ask yourself that. And now we'll move on to ghost news. We're going to spend a good majority of our time talking about the ghosts tonight because it's that time of the year, of course. And, geez, where did this take place? I don't even know where the story took place, but wherever it is, we're going to go there. This is kind of an interesting story. It was a little frustrating for me to see this. I couldn't understand how these people couldn't understand this, but and the more I thought about it, I get it. So ghosts and babies, well, they've been in the news quite a bit this last year, and really this last couple of weeks. I've seen a few stories talking about ghosts and babies, and you know, we had that that pirate lady earlier this year and late last year trying to be impregnated by a ghost. We're not going to go there. But this story, probably my favorite ghost baby story of the year. A 32-year-old mother put her 18-month-old son named Lincoln to bed last Thursday night, but was shocked when she saw a ghost on the baby monitor. Ooh. Gotta have some sound effects. You know, back in the day, when I first started the show, everything was pre-recorded. So I would have all kinds of noises and songs and music and things. And crows was my big thing. It started to show off with crows in 3D. I don't know why I'm talking about this. But so I guess I've got to make my own sound effects. Anyway, Martiza Syllabus or Syllables told Today. She said, quote, "At first I thought my eyes were playing tricks on me. I tried to ignore it, but it was really starting to creep me out," unquote. Martiza was home with just her 18-month-old and her 2-year-old daughter, Avery, when she saw the ghost baby in the crib. Dun, dun, dun. Then the panicked mother did what any mother would do. She took pictures of the baby monitor and shared them on social media. Because that makes sense, right? Of course, that's what a lot of people would do. She also shared it with family to see what they thought, see if they could come to any logical explanation or to help them or help her figure it out. She even consulted a parents group on Facebook to get answers. Probably not the best place to go, to be honest. And let me share with you guys a picture of this ghost baby. One of the ones on, don't worry, I have more ghost pictures of this. So this is one that she saw. She took a picture of this dude. So there's the ghost baby. And so she saw, you know, this her baby laying there in the crib, and the baby would move, and all of a sudden, there's a ghost baby in the crib. Ghost baby. So, yes, she did go into the nursery, though, so don't fear. She did go into the nursery to check on the baby. She did use a flashlight. She didn't want to turn the lights on. She didn't want to wake her baby up. But she didn't see anything there when she was in there. There's no ghost, nothing floating around. Her baby wasn't floating, anything like that. There was no weird stuff going on. And she did feel that there had to be a rational explanation. It's got to be something to explain this. But again, as she saw her son roll over, the ghost baby popped up again. And she'd start to panic again, of course. I mean, what mom wouldn't panic to see a ghost trying to get at her baby? It's pretty scary looking. Yeah. Once her husband, Corey, came home from work, she showed him the ghostly attachment to their son. Well, the mystery was quickly solved as Corey, he was actually to blame for the ghost. It was all his fault. No, he didn't do anything sinister. There's no other baby involved, no other baby's mama or nothing like that. So when he changed the crib sheets, he basically forgot to put the mattress protector on top of the bed. So on top of the mattress pad is a sticker for the mattress. And on the sticker for the mattress is a little baby, a picture of a baby. So let me share with you a picture of that. Maybe. It's ghost baby. So here's their picture of, they took a picture of that with the sheet pulled back. And you can see there's the baby. And wow. Yeah, and again, for me, I mean, I was just amazed that the mom would fall for this. But again, thinking about it for a bit, I realize not everyone's familiar with infrared technology and why the baby was visible through the sheet. It's probably kind of scary, kind of nerve-wracking to see this image of a baby just appear on the sheet like that. So when she went into the nursery, she wouldn't have been able to see this through the sheet, especially using a flashlight. So it's brighter there. But with the infrared technology, you'd have been able to see through the porous layer of the sheet, and this light would have brought that picture through the sheet, and you would have been able to see that. But yikes. I mean, I don't know. I was thinking about this a little bit deeper. But anyway, this is I did my research because that's what I do, and never did I think I would ever be researching a baby's mattress pad for a story here on the Paranormal News Insider, but I did. First time ever in 11 plus years, I found out this is a Simmons Kids Beauty Rest Beginnings Nighttime Whimsy Luxury Firm Mattress. And the logo for the Simmons Kids Beauty Rest Beginnings Nighttime Whimsy Luxury Firm Mattress logo features a baby with its mouth open. And that was seen through the camera in darkness due to the contrast and through the porous sheet. And so let me show you, since I did all this work, I've got to show you this picture of the mattress pad that I did find on a website. So I have to show this because I did a lot of work for it. So here's the actual sticker of what it looks like. That bit, you couldn't see it before, but I think it looks cool. There's the actual Nighttime Whimsy Luxury Firm mattress. It's a little baby. But, I thought about it, and I thought, you know, wouldn't she have recognized that? I'm just saying. On a follow-up Facebook post the next day, she revealed the truth behind the ghostly encounter and also stated that she took the sheet-changing responsibilities back from her husband. And again, it makes me wonder, did she ever change the sheets before on this? Because I think she would have seen this before. And why do they leave the sticker on the mattress? I don't know. But I guess panic can make us forget the simplest things. That is a pretty simple thing. I mean, I've worked in retail for a long time. And I recognize that right away. I've seen that before. So spooky, scary stuff. But you know what? The best ghost stories, I think, are the real ones. Or the historical ones, too, because they got to be based in some sort of truth, right? So let's talk ghost movies. While we're talking about ghosts, it is Halloween. So people are watching ghost movies. People are watching Halloween movies. All sorts of cool stuff is on TV. And, of course, you know, you got all this Netflix and stuff. I don't think Netflix is really doing anything, though, are they? I don't know. Anyway, Paste Magazine. Never heard of them before. Paste Magazine revealed a list of their top 50 best ghost movies of all time. And I'm always reluctant when it comes to lists of especially movies and songs, because we all have our own feelings about movies and songs, and that can differ tremendously from person to person. So not everybody's going to feel the same way about this list of movies. And I'll be honest, I wasn't really excited about some of these choices. But again, think of it this way. This isn't just about movies about ghosts. This is about not a list about scary movies, but just ghosts in general. So I'm not going to read all 50. Some of these are actually movies from Europe. So like, there's a lot of Japanese stuff in here as well. So it's kind of weird. It's like all over the place. And some of these are older movies, and some of them are fairly new movies. But again, I won't read all 50. But let's start at number 50. Number 50 is 1995's Casper. And that had Bill Pullman in it. Bill Pullman would go on to be a president not too far later. Bill Pullman. Casper. So it's a kid's movie. I get it. The whole the concept of Casper's backstory, everything, it's pretty dark, actually, if you really dig into it. Number 48 on the list is The Entity from 1982. Big disappointment. That one should have been much higher, I think. Number 47 is Stir of Echoes from 1999. Another one that I thought should have been way, way higher. Way higher. Number 45, the 1979 horror flick, The Amityville Horror. Which is, it's a movie based on real events. It's not really exactly how it happened, but based, I should say loosely based on real events, which I don't think the authors of this countdown seem to realize. I think that should have bumped it way up on the countdown here. They do point out that 16 films have been made to date with the name Amityville in the title. So this one does have a little bit of weight to it. Another shocker is that the 1991 movie, get ready for this. This totally took me by surprise, too, and I almost had to watch it again just to be sure. But I read the little blurb about it, and I said, okay, whatevs. 1991 movie Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey ranks higher than those movies I just mentioned. So the Amityville Horror and The Entity. And even Casper got beat out by Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey that landed at number 43. It had some ghost stuff in it, I guess. Where they were in heaven and hell, I guess. But actually, I never saw that one. I saw the first one, but not that one. The 1973 movie The Legend of Hell House lands at number 42. John Carpenter's The Fog from 1980 is at number 34. And, of course, the ghost movie of ghost movies, the Patrick Swayze hit 1990s Ghost, flies in at number 33. Couldn't think of anything to do with pottery, so I just said flies in. Anyway, the 1959 version of House on Haunted Hill is number 32, and 2013's The Conjuring makes the list at number 28. The 1984 version of A Christmas Carol makes the list at number 20. Of course, The Christmas Carol is it's based on a really old story, so it's a pretty good one. A surprising one to me, and this actually makes a lot of sense when you think about it. It's a baseball movie dealing with ghosts. Not too many of those around. 1989 movie. It's a classic. Field of Dreams hits in at number 17. And the Tim Burton hit Beetlejuice, number 10, Beetlejuice. And I won't say it a third time because I don't want him showing up. The 1999 hit, I've already seen this one mentioned in the chat room, The Sixth Sense, is number 9. So it made the top 10. 1984's Ghostbusters, my favorite ghost movie of all time. That should have been number 1. I got my sippy cup right here with the ghost on it. Ghost crossed out logo. Take a sippy. There it is. There's my Ghostbusters official show mug. That was number 7. The 1982 movie Poltergeist was number 4. Pretty good one. It did feature ghost investigators in that one, too, which is pretty good. The 1961 movie The Innocents was number 2. And the number 1 ghost movie, according to Paste Magazine, the 1980 Stanley Kubrick film The Shining. The Shining. Again, not how I would have piled them up, but you can check out PasteMagazine.com, and you can find that article. Or you can go in the chat room, and I'll give you the link right now. How's about that? So let me throw that link there in the chat room, and hopefully it doesn't land on somebody this time. We had an injury in the chat room. Somebody got hit by a flying link. So there it is. And that's your top 50 movies of ghosts. I'm going to have to put together my own list. And I forgot the link. I don't have the link for the ghost, the baby ghost, but I'll get that. I know where the story's at, and I'll find it. So during the Halloween season, there's a few articles floating around that talk about the history of the holiday. A few dozen, really. It seems like every talk show is talking about it. Radio shows are talking about it. And I've covered many of these topics here on the Paranormal News Insider over the years, talking about the history of Halloween, where it comes from, and why we believe in certain things. But I came across an article this year that kind of got my attention. It's something I've never seen this perspective talked about, a very unique perspective. The article is titled "The Frightening History of Halloween Haunted Houses." So it's kind of talking about the concept of haunted houses. And I had another haunted house story I was going to talk about, but I decided not to do it because I don't support that. But anyway, it seems the Irish brought their tradition of pranking to the United States in relation to Halloween. So pranking, taking things apart, putting them back together on a rooftop, or doing a lot of crazy and dangerous things. Elaborate and sometimes dangerous pranks was the focus for teenage boys in the 1920s and 1930s. And that would also include breaking streetlights, starting fires, tying wires across sidewalks to trip people, throwing rocks at people, just the regular kind of stuff that you do on the odd occasion. And a lot of other dangerous pranks were carried out, all in the spirit of the holiday. Some cities were reporting that millions of dollars of damage were being done. Many people were being injured or permanently crippled, if not killed, during Halloween, just to celebrate it. Weird. Many cities were considering banning Halloween altogether in their cities, which could have led to the complete abandoning of any type of celebration. We might not have had it anymore. We might have just gone from July 4th right into Christmas, because we wouldn't have had Halloween. Lisa Morton, who wrote the book Trick or Treat, A History of Halloween, said parent and civil groups banded together and created an idea. The idea was to throw kids a party. Morton said, quote, "Because this was the Great Depression, a lot of people didn't have the money. So one of the first things they did was called house-to-house parties," unquote. The neighborhood would all chip in, and one house might give out parts to costumes, such as a sheet to be a ghost. Just make sure you cut holes in it. Another house might hand out candy. And, of course, this was the birth of modern-day trick-or-treating, which is what we do now. We hand out candy. We don't hand out sheets. Those are expensive. Especially those Egyptian cotton ones with the 600 threads counts or whatever. I don't know what those are. I'm just throwing out numbers. So Morton also says, quote, "One of the most common misconceptions about Halloween is that trick-or-treating is some ancient ritual that goes back thousands of years. No, it's really less than 100 years old," unquote. So yeah, parts of Halloween go back thousands of years, 2,000 years. But the act of trick-or-treating, pretty new. Thanks, Hallmark. Another aspect was entertainment. So many houses would create a haunt-type atmosphere many times in the basement. Try that nowadays. You'll end up on the news. Morton commented, quote, they would take the kids down the stairs and it would be really dark. And they would play that classic thing where they might tell the kids to put their hands in a bowl of peeled grapes and tell them it was eyeballs. That sort of thing, unquote. Again, you try that now in 2019, you're going to prison, even if you don't do anything wrong. And people will find your house. It'll be on Facebook. It just won't end. It won't end nicely for you. The civic group called the Junior Chamber. You never heard of them? Well, have you heard of the JCs? That's the same thing. They eventually sponsored Trails of Terror, which was an outdoor version of the house-to-house parties, which took place in a field. It took many years for the pranks to grow out of tradition, but as trick-or-treating and the house-to-house parties grew in tradition, the haunted houses were soon to follow. And it was in 1969 that Disneyland opened the Haunted Mansion. So the Haunted Mansion inspired many haunted house attractions to try new things, as the 1970s were a boom in the haunted house attractions for Halloween. Of course, with the boom of ghost television shows in the early 2000s, haunted houses have become an all-year-round event, with the gory and costume-laden ones operating around Halloween and are still a big business. So if you find yourself decorating the front yard or even the garage in the spirit of the season, you are following the post-prank traditions that began in the 1930s. I know it's a little different. You know, everyone else is talking about Samhain and all that other stuff, and how, you know, the Irish and different people brought stuff to the United States, and, you know, we're the crazy people that still do Halloween, and, you know, there's different belief systems, especially in Mexico, about it and whatnot. But I like that. I think it's an interesting version of Halloween and things that we celebrate. And we've got, well, you know, I did talk last week. We did the YouGov poll, and we did talk about candy, and we talked about dressing up and costumes and things. But there's a whole bunch. There's one here that I really wanted to talk about. And it's strange. It was done by AT&T. AT&TSavings.com. So are you dressing up for Halloween? That's the question. That's the question. So it's been projected that Americans will spend $8.8 billion on Halloween in 2019. And yes, part of this is decorating the house, probably a few cases of beer, a few bags of candy, a few more bags of candy. But many will also be dressing up as something this year. So AT&T has published an article where they've used Google Trends to determine what costumes should be big this year. They essentially came to four distinct categories of costumes: generic, heroes, heroes and villains, I should say, animals, and mythical creatures. So they were able to determine what costumes would be popular in each state here in the United States. It seems that Alabama, Louisiana, and Mississippi are trending towards cheerleaders being the most popular costume. Kind of shocked by that, weren't you? But it's football states. Batman looks to be the main costume choice in Illinois, Kansas, Michigan, New Jersey, and Oklahoma. Black Panther seems to be the hero of choice in the East Coast areas like Delaware, Washington, D.C., Georgia, Maryland, and South Carolina. The Incredibles are the superhero choice in Idaho. They just dress up as potatoes. I don't know. With Wonder Woman taking over New Mexico. Fortnite, which in my day was a measurement of time, but apparently not anymore. It's a video game. Looks to be popular in Iowa, Indiana, Kentucky, Nebraska, and West Virginia. I don't know why. Don't ask me. I have no clue. But mice. Mice seem to be popular for Connecticut, Massachusetts, New York, and Pennsylvania. Or should that be rats? I think it should be rats. Must be a New England thing. I don't know. Mermaids look to be a trend in Hawaii, witches in California, Should be no surprise there. And fairies are taking over Vermont. Generic costumes rule a lot of states, with Arizona, Colorado, Minnesota, Montana, Missouri, Montana, again, I guess I wrote it twice, New Hampshire, North Dakota, and Ohio, as well as Tennessee. Here, looking at that. Yep, Tennessee, favoring the 1980s as a costume choice. And I'm thinking that's, you know, we see that every year. People dressing up as, you know, 80s or other, you know, 50s and 60s. But I think the 80s this year, I've got a lot to bet on that the Stranger Things is probably a theme with a lot of these places, or a lot of these people that are researching the 80s costumes. I'm sure there'll be quite a few Scoops Ahoy costumes out there this year. Some standout states are Alaska, which looks to have a bear be the biggest costume choice this year. A bear. Not sure why. It's not on their flag. Texas seems to be focused on Chucky this year. Chucky. Weird. Nevada, well, they have clowns on their mind. South Dakota and Wisconsin are looking at ninjas. North Carolina is looking at pirate costumes, which is fitting. It's where Blackbeard was killed. Florida is trending with angels. And Wyoming is trending with dinosaur costumes. Pretty, pretty cool. So if I missed your state, too bad. But I do have the link that I can share with y'all. And get that in the chat room for you guys. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Is anyone dressing up? I haven't heard anybody where I work. I haven't heard anybody talking about dressing up. I have no plans. I usually don't. I stopped doing it. Y'all. Yuins, and for those people in Pennsylvania, yins. Anyway, dress up. It's fun. Just don't be weird about it. And I found another story dealing with costumes I thought was really, really cool, tying in with the show. So Batman, I mentioned Illinois. Batman might be the overall costume choice in Illinois this year, but the city of Chicago has a bigger theme that lots of people are already dressing up as. They've already shown off their costumes. It's trending on social media in Chicago. And it matches the biggest story of the year up there. And it's something that we talked about here on this show. So people are dressing up as Frank Robb. And they're sending Frank Robb pictures via social media. And he's in turn posting them on Instagram. What do you mean, who? Who's Frank Robb? Come on, Frank Robb? You don't remember this? So Frank Robb is also known as Alligator Robb. An Alligator Robb was brought up from Florida to help rescue an alligator from the Humboldt Park Lagoon earlier this year. Robb became an instant celebrity and was asked to throw out the first pitch at a Cubs game. He had a bobblehead that was designed after him. He was stopped at the airport for selfies and interviewed by every news station in Chicago. This guy he's famous. He's still famous. He's big time up there. And you don't believe me, I got a picture of that too. Put together this puppy, so you got to see this. Frank Robb, in case you've never seen him, he's got a little bushy beard. And during his trip, his initial trip into Chicago, he was always wearing a black hat. So Alligator Robb became a major influence on people. And as you can see in the picture, there he is on the left with Chance the Snapper. That's the alligator. That's the name. And he threw out the first pitch at a Cubs game the week that he had found Chance the Snapper, or actually captured Chance the Snapper. He's had a bobblehead created after him. I couldn't get it. Everybody bought him. He also met a woman. He's fallen in love with a local, what do they call them in Chicago? Chicagoan, Windy City person? I don't know. A local Chicago woman. So he's frequently coming up to Chicago from Florida. He's going to games, not baseball games anymore, but sports games, sports things, and he's probably going on a lot of dates as well. But he stopped constantly in the airport, people wanting his autograph and getting selfies with him. Oh, yeah, I forgot about the alligator. So, yeah, the alligator, Chance the Snapper, a local paper had a naming contest with Chance the Snapper, made famous by the local rapper, Chance the Rapper. That's where he got his name, in case you didn't know. So people have been putting on big beards, black hats, and dressing up their dogs, their kids, or significant others, and dressing up as Frank Robb in Chicago. This is actually a really big thing. It's all over social media up there in Chicago. It's on the news and everything. So I'm not going to share all of them, but I'll put one in there for good measure. So here's somebody with a costume. He's got the bushy beard and the hat and the blow-up alligator, the tape on its mouth as well. So funny stuff this year, Chicago. And the Block Club Chicago, I think they're the ones behind all that stuff, naming the alligator and all those fun stuff. But, yeah, big story, and it's kind of cool to see that it's still going even after all this time. Chicago Cubs didn't make it very far in the playoffs, but not his fault. Not his fault. They got another curse, I think. But good to see this story still circulating in the news, and people are dressing up as this. I guess people dress up as anything, really. See, before I forget, I want to mention this. I got a tab open here. Tonight, also in Ghost News, I want to mention that I received an email. I'm sure a lot of other people out there in the paranormal have also gotten, or I should say received, this email from A&E Networks. They want me to let you guys know that tomorrow night, October 30th, A&E is having a full night of paranormal programming starting at 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. A&E embarks on the longest continuously filmed paranormal investigation in television history with World's Biggest Ghost Hunt, Penhurst Asylum. And at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific, the season one finale of Ghost Hunters find the team capturing some compelling evidence of a figure looking inside an abandoned 19th century hospital in Texas. And I'll give you guys in the chat room here a little link. I don't know if it, let me see if that's going to work first. Yeah, that's going to work. So these are links to some not released snippets, YouTube snippets. Well, I guess they're released. You can get them. They're on YouTube. Snippets to these shows if you're interested in watching these things. Little sneak peek behind the curtain of all this stuff. So some other stuff about Halloween while we're doing it, while we're talking about it. Some random facts here. Did you know ringing doorbells, lighting candles were thought to ward away witches, ghosts, and evil spirits? And think about this, haunted houses. So we're just talking about the origins of haunted houses. So charities, charitable organizations, actually operate about 80% of those. So I mentioned, I think I said $8.8 billion projected Halloween-related spending this year. Well, 76% of Americans will spend $50 or less on Halloween or for Halloween this year. 68% of Americans plan to celebrate Halloween. The other 32% of you people are boring. But a 32% of Americans are throwing or attending a party. Must be getting old. I don't get invited to those anymore. 44% of Americans plan to carve a pumpkin. Plan to carve a pumpkin. You better hurry. 49% of Americans plan to decorate their home. Better not be for Christmas. Better be for Halloween. 22% of Americans plan to visit a haunted house. 47% of Americans plan to dress in costumes. Keep it tasteful. $3.2 billion. That's the amount Americans will spend on Halloween costumes in 2019. So $3.2 billion. I'm in the wrong industry. 1.3 million children plan to dress as a witch. As a witch. I think, trying to remember. Oh, no, my sister dressed as a witch. I didn't dress as a witch. 2.4 million children will dress as their favorite superhero. 3.1 million children will dress as their favorite princess. Now, superhero, there is no costume of me available. Sorry, kids. You could probably make one, though. 2 million adults will dress as vampires. Vampires still trendy? I didn't think they were. 5 million adults will dress as a witch. It's an easy costume, and a lot of adults don't have to go too far to show that side of themselves. 17% of Americans will dress their pets in costumes. I don't like that. I don't like that. So a pumpkin is pretty much the biggest one. Hot dogs are there. Superheroes, bumblebees. And, of course, I really like those costumes where people put it's like a person or whatever, and the dog is walking, and it looks like I saw one. It's got like they're carrying a case of Corona. It's like a person in the back and a dog in the front as a person. Anyway, moving along. Now, 1927 is when the phrase trick or treat was first used in the United States. 41 million plus is the number of potential trick or treaters in 2019 of children ages 5 to 14. Of course, it depends on the weather in your area. Of course, 122 million is the number of potential stops for trick or treaters. You know, occupied housing units, basically. That's a lot of stops. Of course, that's a lot of candy, too. And 69% of Americans plan to give candy to trick-or-treaters. And there was $2.6 billion projected of Halloween candy spending in 2019. 29% of Americans plan to take their children trick-or-treating. 72%. Shame on you. Shame on you, 72%. 72% of parents admit to secretly eating their children's candy. 85% of parents have a plan for helping their children enjoy candy in moderation. Moderation. Yeah, eat all the candy bars one day, all the gummies the next, and then the chocolate the day after. I don't know. It's usually gone within a week. 68% of Americans say chocolate is their favorite holiday treat or Halloween treat. And I know I talked about candy last week. This poll shows that Skittles are America's favorite Halloween candy, followed by Reese's Cups, M&M's in third, Snickers in fourth, and Starburst in fifth. A little Halloween safety here. 800 is the average American, the average number of Halloween house fires here in the United States. 34 people are hurt by Halloween house fires each year. And $11 million direct property damage caused by Halloween house fires each year. So 800, 11 million. That's about 14,000 per house, I think. It's not very much. 35% of parents discuss Halloween safety with their kids. 35%? It's bad. It should be higher. 83% of parents check their child's candy for anything dangerous before they eat it. Hopefully they're not eating all the candy. They're letting the children eat it. But anyway, 36% of parents think 12 or 13 is old enough for a child to trick or treat alone. I say 25. 19% of parents say children should be 14 or 15 years old before trick or treating on their own. Still don't agree with that. Should be 25. Two times more children are killed as pedestrians on Halloween than the average day, even dressed up as superheroes. 42% of Halloween night motor vehicle deaths involve drunk driving. And Halloween is probably the biggest drinking holiday overall. I know it's the number one cupcake holiday. Let's talk some spookonomics. Some more spookonomics. $300 million plus annual revenue generated from ticket sales for haunted attractions. The average price being about $15. And like I mentioned at the beginning of the story, 80% of haunted attractions across America are operated by a charity. A $2 million plus revenue of large haunted house during the Halloween season. So $2 million plus of revenue. Wow, that's a lot of money. $50,000 plus revenue of a small haunted house during the Halloween season. $902 million. That's the U.S. box office earnings for horror movies in 2018. I don't think the Kardashians had anything. $4.65. Not even $5. The average retail price of a pumpkin, which is actually up 5.9% from 2018. I still think it's kind of high. $4.65. So £2. £2. That's not correct. 2 billion pounds. 2 billion pounds of pumpkins are produced in the U.S. each year. Was it Illinois has like five times the amount of everybody else? Illinois, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, New York, and California produce the most pumpkins for the United States. 1921 was the first citywide Halloween celebration in Anoka, Minnesota. No, I wasn't there. 2 million spectators joined 60,000 costume participants at New York's Village Halloween Parade, which is the world's largest. Not the Dia de los Muertos Parade in Mexico City, which I'm shocked at. 7,183 feet and 8.4 inches. That's the record for the longest walk-through horror house, the Dragon's House of Horror in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Zero. That's the number of black cats that are placed on adoption by some shelters in October to protect them from Halloween-related abuse. That one is true. I've volunteered at some organizations like that, and that is true. 2020 is the next time there will be a full moon on Halloween, and the last, if you remember, was 2001. So next year, an extra spooky year. And in case you were wondering, I know somebody was wondering this earlier today, the record for the most jack-o'-lanterns lit at once was back in New Hampshire in 2013. That number was 30,581. That's a lot of pumpkins. So one last thing I did want to talk about. It's kind of a long thing here, but I did want to mention, it's kind of like a public service thing here. I know this is the big holiday. Halloween is the biggest time of the year for those of us in the ghost field. And I know pretty much I remember Halloween is a time of the year that kind of helped me get interested in the ghost field. And I know that's when I'm contacted the most by kids, students asking questions, or by people that want, people want me to speak at a library around that time of the year. So it's a big time for ghost people. Or people in the ghost field, I should say, maybe for ghost people too, I don't know. And a lot of people get into this as a hobby around this time of the year as well. So they get interested in it, and they stick to it through November and December. Some of them drop off pretty quick. So I did want to mention a few things this week, giving some advice for those of you who are there thinking about getting into the field as a ghost hunter. Or maybe you've been doing it for a while, I don't know. So one thing I do want to mention, do plenty of reading. Read books about ghosts and ghost investigation, but not scary ghost stories or true ghost stories, books like that. But look at ghost research. Not only this, but also read the skeptical side of things. So this will help give you a little bit of a balance. Believing in ghosts or don't believing in ghosts, that's easy. Too simple. But being able to understand both sides takes patience and understanding. Equipment. I recommend a flashlight, maybe walkie-talkies if you're in a large area, a camera, an audio recorder, and maybe a notepad and a pen. Beyond that, I don't recommend bringing much else to an investigation. In the last 20 years, it's seemingly become the focus. Tools and technology have to be there to have a good investigation. The reality is there's not been any increase in any tangible evidence collected at all. We're no closer to proving ghosts exist than we were 20, 40, or 60 years ago since technology has been brought into the field. It doesn't do anything. What it does do is make people fall victim to false positive information because they think that they're communicating with ghosts. It's not even worth it, folks. Leave them in the car. Leave them at home. EMF detectors. So an EMF detector spikes doesn't mean a ghost did it. On that note, probably some of the best important information I have is that, remember, just because you can't explain something doesn't mean it's not explainable, for starters, and it certainly doesn't mean that's paranormal. The tools have become a distraction from ghost research, and it's really and truly, it's a connection of a living person to the environment and to some piece of a formerly living person's consciousness. Anything else we add to this, such as a flashlight trick or other device or your cell phone with an app, completely confuses and complicates this entire process. So EMF detectors, they're okay to have. I'm not saying don't use them, but use it for its intended purpose. Find loose wires or bad grounding. These higher energy fields can lead to psychological effects that are very similar to what people experience when they're experiencing ghosts. And so can carbon monoxide poisoning, for that matter. Very scary thing and very true. Don't recommend your cell phone as a ghost hunting tool. The only reason is that, they're not very good EMF detectors, and no other app can replace using a tool that tool was designed for that specific purpose. And again, no piece of technology has ever proven to detect or communicate with a ghost, period. Let's see, ghost hunting in the dark. You don't have to do it in the dark. Doesn't add anything extra. Doesn't benefit you at all. It actually just takes away your best sense, which is your sight. And really think about it. People investigate in the dark, but what do? They bring flashlights. That pretty much negates that whole entire thing anyway. So last thing here, you don't have to talk to the ghosts. You don't have to talk to a ghost. If you ask investigators all over the world what's most common, a residual ghost or an interactive apparition, hopefully they're all going to say residual ghosts. These are far more common that happen to people. And they're not going to communicate when you ask them a question. So it doesn't make sense that the first thing that people do when they go into a building or they start a session is ask questions. Makes zero sense. The best way to have a ghostly interaction, again, don't have tools. Don't be staring at something. Look around. Be aware of your surroundings and have a tangible belief that you will encounter something. Be willing and able to find a logical solution to things that you do hear and observe, but don't be overly critical, as this will hurt your chances of connecting to the environment. Lastly, have fun. Don't be scared. Don't be afraid. Ghosts don't hurt people. Only people hurt people. Be relaxed and observant. This will give you the best chance of having an experience. But again, don't be out of control. Don't be goofing off. Don't let yourself get out of control laughing hysterically. Or most importantly, staring at a piece of technology. Staring down at your phone. Staring down at the EMF detector. Listening to your digital recorder. All these things are bad. Don't do it. Pay attention to the environment, and you just might encounter something. And the biggest and last piece here, remember, you are creating the culture for those that will eventually learn from you. Just like Halloween traditions are handed down, so are ghost investigation techniques and beliefs. And many of those are already lost due to the television generation and the focus on these tools and technology. So with that being said, want to thank everyone for showing up tonight in the chat room. Hope you guys had a good time tonight. I know I did. I'm excited about Halloween, but remember, be safe. And yes, have a happy Halloween. And just take care of each other out there. Take care of the kids. And you don't have to hand all your candy out. Save some for yourself, too. So with that being said, I will see you next week. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.